Welcome to Political Rewind. We're glad to have you with us for the start of another week here on our show. We continue, this is our third week now, to do the show from remote locations today around the state. I continue to do the show out of my house in the Decatur area. Jim Galloway will join me in a minute. He's out at his place up in West Cobb County. For the time being, all of our panelists will continue to join us by telephone. Jim Galloway is here. He, of course, is the lead political writer for the AJC. You read him on Wednesdays and Sundays in the newspaper, and he oversees the Political Insider blog. Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
Oh, we're doing fine. We're doing fine. It's a little bit isolating, I guess. That's the most overused word, I suppose, these days.
Yeah.
But we're here.
Yeah. Right. Well, we really appreciate your continuing to be able to be part of Political Rewind in these difficult times. We're joined also by Patricia Murphy. She's a syndicated columnist who writes for Roll Call. She worked on the Hill for Senator Sam Nunn and Max Cleveland. And now I'm really always happy to be able to say is now a reporter for GPB show The Lawmakers, which has gone into an unexpected hiatus, Patricia.
Yes, it feels very showbiz to say my show is on hiatus, you know, but we'll pick it up. As soon as the legislature is back, we will be back, and I think the end of it will be just as interesting, if not more so, than the beginning.
Yeah, we're going to watch that very closely. Also joining us from Savannah, Adam Van Brimmer. He's the editorial page editor of the Savannah Morning News and Savannah Now, which is the online version of the paper. Adam, thank you for joining us today. A little later in the show, we're going to talk to you, get a portrait from you of how things are going down in Savannah, where some couple of days ago, your mayor imposed a shelter-in-place order. But for the time being, let me just say hi. How are you doing, Adam?
Hi, Bill. Very good. Thank you for having me. It's been about 2 weeks since I had a pair of dress shoes on, so that's always, I guess if there's a silver lining in this whole deal, that's one of them, right?
Yeah, okay. I want to, first, before we're going to introduce, we have a very special guest for the show today. Before I introduce him, I want to give you the latest on what we know about coronavirus in the state of Georgia. These figures are as of noon yesterday, and they're, of course, disconcerting. We now have 2,683 confirmed cases of the virus. That's up 1,040 cases since we were on the air Friday. Sadly, we've had 83 deaths, 27 of them over the weekend. We know that the virus continues to strike hard in Metro Atlanta. What's really interesting, but it's now in, by the way, like 113 plus counties across the state. What's really interesting is in terms of people who have been tested and confirmed, and that means that's probably just a small number of what might really be the case out there. It's interesting that 56% of those people tested positive are between the ages of 18 and 59, whereas only 35% are people age 60 and over, which defies some of the more stereotypical expectations that we had about the disease striking harder at older people. And at some point, we're going to talk about just what that may mean. All right, let's do this. I want to bring in the mayor of Albany, Georgia, Bo Durow. Mayor Durow has been facing, along with his public health leaders in the city, one of the most difficult hotspots in the eastern United States, really. Mayor Durow, I'm looking at the figures for your town and for the county around you from Phoebe Putney, which is your medical center down there. You have had at least 16 deaths in Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital, an additional two at Phoebe Sumter. And we won't even go into all of the other confirmed cases of the disease. But first of all, Mayor, thank you so much for taking time to join us today.
Good morning. Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Let me start, and I'll give everybody a chance to ask you a question, but I want to make a point here that I think people have been reading about Albany and the troubles you've been having with the virus there, I think not just across the state of Georgia, but you've been in the national news. We learned over the weekend that you have a sad statistic. On a per capita basis, you have more cases of virus than all but three other cities in the world at this point. But here's the point that I want to make. You were just sworn in as mayor in January. You have only had a couple of months in office, and now you're confronting this dreadful crisis. This is not, Mayor, how I imagined you expected your first term in office would begin.
Well, I mean, that's true, Bill. Obviously, you know, when you run for office, you have objectives. We were going to try to reverse the loss of population, strengthen the local economy, reduce crime, lift citizens out of poverty. But all that's kind of put on the back burner when something like this strikes. So, but we are in Albany, fortunately, not fortunately, but we have encountered and overcome natural disasters in the past 20 years, and I think that in some ways that helped us prepare for what we found ourselves in the middle of a maelstrom before we really knew what was going on.
Mayor, I know you have a team of CDC public health workers that have come down there to help you. Give us, if you would, just a picture of how the community is faring right now in terms of the widespread nature of the virus there, what it's done to your to the citizens of the communities in and around Albany, what it's done to closing down the businesses. Just give us a brief picture of what it feels like to be in the middle of Albany right now.
Well, the vast majority of our citizens and businesses have been cooperative. I think most people understand the gravity of the situation, and but of course we do have some problems with non-compliance with these executive orders. I could go through sort of the chronology, Bill, if that's what you wanted to hear. But I mean, at present, of course, all the gyms, bars, nightclubs, theaters closed. City recreation facilities are closed. The libraries are closed, and pursuant to an executive order that was entered last Sunday, what's termed non-essential businesses have been directed to suspend operations.
Jim Galloway?
Yeah, Mayor, thanks for coming on with us. I really appreciate you devoting this time in during a crisis like this. My question for you is, I mean, given the fact that you've got, as Bill said, the highest per capita rate of infection in most of the world, when you run across people who are skeptics, who are not sheltering in place, who continue to want to gather, what kind of excuses are you getting, or are your people getting? I just find that it's given the serious situation, I find that hard to fathom.
Well, Jim, some of it, I think, is explained by the fact we were all teenagers and in our young 20s at one point in time. I think a lot of our younger residents just don't appreciate the fact that they could contract the virus and spread the virus, even though they never exhibit symptoms. And that's why they need to stay at home. We're having problems with some young people congregating. We are trying to manage this executive order. The executive order requires that businesses maintain social distances between patrons. Some patrons aren't recognizing it. Then again, there are people who are gathering despite the terms of the executive order and the directive of the governor. So the problem here is, even if a small percentage of the population is non-compliant, that increases the risk of continued spread of the virus.
Have you made any arrests or issued any fines, or are you just trying to persuade people at this point?
Well, we've been trying to persuade people, but there are reports of businesses which continue to operate that have clearly been notified they're not essential businesses. people who continue to congregate after having been instructed to disperse. And so at this point in time, the police are going to issue citations. You know, there's been an interesting recommendation that people who are cited for violating shelter-in-place orders could be placed on a list, and that would disqualify them from stimulus money. I think that might be a very effective incentive.
Patricia, you want to jump in?
Yes. Hi, Mr. Mayor. It's Patricia Murphy with GPB. Thanks for joining us. We have been, I think, so alarmed at the struggles of Phoebe Putney Hospital. And I'd be interested to know, beyond the hospital itself, how is this affecting your own city operations? I don't know if there's anything that y'all are doing to support the hospital or if this is affecting your job on a day-to-day basis.
Oh, absolutely. And it is a collaborative effort. We have a task force and administrators and the chief physician at Phoebe are involved. But as you know or probably aware, Phoebe, like many hospitals throughout the country, had a shortage of nurses even before the coronavirus struck our community. We know that several nurses and other providers have been exposed. The chronology here, there was an excellent article, I don't know if you saw it, that Mr. Schrade wrote in the Atlanta Journal about the outbreak has, the primary outbreak has been connected to two funeral services, the first of which was on February 28th, and a gentleman who was in town to attend that service was admitted to Phoebe Putney, and this was before there was a confirmed case in the state. And apparently he was hospitalized, he was triaged, and because of his medical history, he was treated as someone with a chronic pulmonary problem. Well, this gentleman, after he was stabilized, was transferred to Atlanta. He passed away a few days later, following which it was determined that he had coronavirus. And so Phoebe Putney had several nurses and other providers who had been exposed to him without protective equipment for 5 or 6 days. And these employees had to be taken out of the rotation, further depleting the workforce. And that is one thing that I've learned in the last 2 weeks, what they call health spread. And apparently nurses and other healthcare professionals who work in close proximity to patients with COVID-19 are particularly susceptible to infection.
Adam Van Brimmer, I want to give you a chance to get in here, but as I do, I want to read you a quick update that came out at last night, close to midnight, from Phoebe Putney that will help us move the conversation forward with the mayor. Here's what Phoebe Putney says. Over the last 20 hours, Phoebe received its largest number of daily COVID-19 test results so far. The 364 total results included 125 positives, 239 negatives. There hadn't been any additional deaths. So they're doing more testing, and that's a positive thing. And I just wanted to get that in there before you jump in here, Adam.
Could I say something, Bill?
Yeah, sure.
That is a problem because it's all going to happen all over the country, but particularly being on the front line here in Albany, there were only a limited number of test kits initially. And so the physicians were what they called judicious in administering the test, and that meant they wouldn't test someone unless they were presented with the symptoms, which are fever, cough, and shortness of breath. So as a result, we were getting only a limited number of tests administered. But to compound that problem, the few labs in the country who could process, we call the test, it's really nothing but a sample, and they were so overwhelmed, it was 5 to 10 days before we were getting test results back.
Adam?
Hey, good morning, Mr. Mayor.
Morning.
Here in Savannah, we're home to the region's big trauma hospital, and I'm really curious, and you've kind of touched on this a little bit, is from a healthcare and from a dealing with with sick people coming in, what are some of the lessons learned that you guys have really grasped that maybe you can share with the rest of us as our cases start to climb?
Adam, certainly we want other communities to take advantage of something that we didn't have, and that's the time and opportunity to prepare for this. The CEO of Phoebe Putney, I was reading an article, they actually had purchased additional supplies and personal protective equipment once the news of the virus, we're talking early this year, but they keep, the representatives of the hospital have been telling us they're burning through supplies, and I didn't know what that was until last weekend. The chief of staff said they're going through 46,000 pairs of gloves a day, 5,800 surgical masks a day, 1,500 respiratory masks a day, and 800 pair of goggles. So, I mean, the hospital is continually, I mean, every 48 hours, they're out of PPE, and fortunately, there have been supplies, some from the state, some from the national stockpile, and some from other hospitals that have come to augment and, I guess, defer the crisis of not having adequate equipment. But there again, another thing here, and you heard the president talk about it, ventilators. An inordinate number of patients who have severe symptoms go into respiratory failure. I mean, 5% of the patients is what I'm hearing, and they require medical ventilation. They also need to stay on the ventilators for extended period of times. And as a result, Phoebe on two occasions has been provided, and we're grateful the state provided five. We had 20 ventilators provided from another source, and as a result, they've been able to accommodate the number of patients who are critically ill.
Are you getting the support, or Mayor, maybe a better way to ask the question is what other kind of support from a healthcare perspective do you guys are you most desperate for right now?
Well, Adam, you know this is what we need to know. This shortage of nurses is a problem throughout the country, and I think hospitals and other communities in the state of Georgia need to go ahead and put in a plan, or how are you going to staff? I'm hearing that many of these nurses at Phoebe Putney are working 72 hours a week, but there's a shortage of ventilators. There needs to be a contingency plan, obviously, but this is an opportunity that other communities have to prepare for what is. I hope this doesn't happen in Columbus and Augusta and Macon and Savannah, but by every indication, maybe not to the extent, but it's coming.
Well, Mayor, that's exactly what I wanted to ask you about. You're certainly aware of the fact that for a couple of weeks now, Governor Kemp has been under a lot of pressure to issue a blanket order for communities across the state to shelter in place. The governor has repeatedly has said that that's not necessary because there are communities, counties, where there is virtually no virus, and he doesn't feel those counties should have to abide by shelter-in-place regulations. He thinks they should be allowed to continue with commerce and that sort of thing. But given what you're going through there, and given what you've just said about hoping that this doesn't happen to the degree you've got it in Albany, how do you feel about the fact there's not a statewide shelter-in-place order?
Well, I mean, Bill, I can only say we were on a conference call with the governor, and there were county commissioners from contiguous counties and other places in Southwest Georgia, mayors from cities, and some county administrators on the 24th, and the governor was very pointed. He advised these gentlemen, people in your counties are dying as well. This is a regional problem, and it requires prompt and decisive action to protect the people of Southwest Georgia. I understand, and I could give you a list. The governor said, we're prepared, and we're in the process of doing these things. And the governor has been very attentive and very helpful. But I think we're going to come to the point, and we are gradually ramping up the restrictions we place on people, it is difficult. But I think it is better to do more and not less, and to do it sooner rather than later to reduce the spread of the virus.
You know, Jim, there seems to be some confusion coming out of the governor's office. And here's what I mean by that. Tell me if you think I'm wrong, and we'll get everybody else into this, including you, Mayor. On one hand, the governor has supported communities like Albany, like Savannah, where they have, in fact, issued stronger orders. They've taken stronger measures to have people keep proper social distance, that sort of thing. On the other hand, we're now hearing out of the governor's office that there's some frustration that there's this patchwork of different standards being applied in different communities. Jim, I don't see how you can have it both ways.
No, and it's inconsistent and a little contradictory, and people are taking note. Over the weekend, you had Tim Fleming, who is the governor's chief of staff, put up a long Facebook post, going after these complaints, and he and other conservatives have pointed at what they think are some mistakes in the modeling. For instance, they've been going after Del Rio, our Dr. Del Rio of Grady at Emory, for some of his predictions that the Georgia Municipal Association has relied on, and they're saying it's inaccurate. Yeah, it's holding up pretty well right now, and Del Rio himself will tell you that he would love to be wrong on this.
Patricia, you want to jump back in?
Well, I do think the mixed messages, I think everybody is sending a message that it is serious, and the question is just how serious. And so for the average Georgian sitting at home wondering if they can get together with their neighbors across the street, or can they just run to the store really quickly, or maybe run get their hair done. When you have a message coming from the governor that, well, it's up to every locality, and some of those localities are doing a lot less than others, and that's okay, I think that is a message that tells individual Georgians maybe it's not as bad as we were told. And I think that's the real difference, is the mixed message and what it does to the individual making choices.
You know what, Mayor, I think that what, and I know you have to go in a minute, but I think Patricia just made a point that we ought to have you comment on. If there are messages coming, initially from the White House until this weekend, if messages coming from the governor's office saying this isn't necessarily bad in some parts of the state, so we don't want to shut everything down, do you fear that it's that kind of mixed messaging or refusal to be really firm in how we deal with this in a statewide or national way that leads people, Mayor, to want to go out and mingle with one another, to not pay as close attention to the social distancing, to making sure they're washing their hands properly? Is it creating an atmosphere of forgiveness about all of this?
Well, I it's not for me to speculate. Is a decision-making process in the state capitol. But and like I say, I am appreciative of what the governor's office has done for Albany and Southwest Georgia. But I think we need to understand this is not a natural disaster. This is a public health emergency. And that gets back to what I said. We need to take decisive action. And if we exercise precautions and it reduces the number of deaths, I think in the long run, it would really reduce the economic impact that we all understand is going to follow this epidemic.
I got to ask you one last question before I let you go. Listeners to Political Rewind have been very clear in their wanting to be engaged as much as possible, caring about what's happening across the state and across the country. What can we do to help you, Mayor? I mean, you're getting help from the state, as you say. Hopefully you're going to get some of the federal funds that are going to be released now that Georgia's been granted emergency status. But what can people like me and our panel and the people around us do to offer any kind of help of any sort at all?
Well, obviously, think about us, pray for us. I mean, we have heroes down here that, Bill, we take for granted every day. The nurses, the police officers, I mean, the first responders. We have EMS officers who, in the early stages of this onslaught, actually went into a home to remove a body, and that gentleman, unbeknownst to them, had died of the coronavirus. So, but take the precautions. I mean, here, if wash your hands repeatedly throughout the day with soap and water, exercise social distancing. If you have the symptoms, do not go to the emergency room. Contact your primary care physician. If you go to the emergency room and you have the virus, you can infect other people. Or if you don't have the virus, you might come in contact with it. Repeatedly sanitize surfaces, your workspace, your cell phones, your keypads throughout the day. And if anybody's sick, they need to stay home. And if you've been diagnosed with the virus, please do not go in public. Just exercise these precautions. And one thing we hadn't talked about is protecting the elderly, because we know that they're the most susceptible to the virus, and those are that segment of the population is generally having the worst outcomes.
Well, Mayor, I appreciate your offering us advice on how we can take care of ourselves, and we will continue to think about you. Keep you and the people of your community in our thoughts. Thank you so much for spending time with us today, and with continued efforts in your community, I hope the spread down there slows down as quickly as possible. Thanks so much, Mayor Duro.
Thank you, Mr.
Let's do this. Let's get a break out of the way. And when we come back, we've got a lot more to talk about on Political Rewind. We're back on Political Rewind. Patricia Murphy, Jim Galloway, Adam Van Brimmer all join us today. Adam, I want to start with you because it was, I guess, just about a little less than a week ago that your mayor, Van Johnson, issued a basic shelter-in-place order. I got an email late last week from a listener who's a Savannah resident, who's very frustrated because he believes that the order is largely being ignored in Savannah. He works in a job where he pumps and cleans portable toilets for a living, and he called his boss after the order was put in place and asked whether he was had to work or not, and the boss said, absolutely you do. Are people following the order down there, Adam?
He's not the only one that's a little frustrated. The city council's had daily conference calls, and almost every day one of them voices some kind of frustration with the widespread ignoring of the call. And it kind of goes back to what guys were talking about earlier, is the city of Savannah has one order. Unincorporated Chatham County has another. The municipalities in the county, which off the top of my head, I think there's 9 in Chatham County, all have different ones. So whether it's confusion or just ignoring the orders or what have you, it has not gone as smoothly as it could. And then, of course, it all started here with the whole idea of this sprung up at one of the most social times of the year for the people around here, and that was the St. Patrick's Day festival and St. Patrick's Day celebration. And when that came up and the mayor ended up canceling that, and it just caused a lot of angst and it got very emotional very quickly for a lot of people. And it just hasn't seemed to catch up yet. But as it gets more serious, I think we're up to 15 cases here now. As that starts to climb, who knows when it'll turn what is the turning point, I guess, is the real question for us right now.
So at this point, your hospitals, your medical centers have not felt the kind of stress that we're seeing up here in some of the Metro Atlanta hospitals or down there in Albany, but they're bracing for it, is I think what you're telling us.
Absolutely, they're bracing for it. I'm looking at the case count now. Chatham County is at 16 as of last night at 7 o'clock, and then Effingham and Bryan County, which are our neighboring counties, is another 11. So you're looking at 27 confirmed cases. But like a lot of places in the state, I think the telling thing here is not a whole lot of testing is being done. They're very much rationing the testing. in order to prioritize the testing. And as more test kits become available and as efforts ramp up, I think you're going to see that. We've seen it everywhere else. I think you're going to see that number climb pretty rapidly. And the hospitals, there's three hospitals in Savannah, and I think they're all three ready, but I guess time will tell.
So, Patricia and Jim, I want to get you two in this part of the conversation. We saw the landscape change dramatically, I think, over the weekend when President Trump went from saying he wanted to reopen the country by Easter to saying he, in fact, advised communities around the country to shelter in place until the end of April. And he, for the first time, seemed to acknowledge that we could have up to 200,000 deaths, which is what Dr. Fauci had projected at the high end, 100,000 to 200,000 deaths. And so, Patricia, and then Jim, I wonder how this makes an impact. We talked an awful lot on the show about whether the state is going to take action across the board to issue an order for everyone to shelter in place. And I wonder if this might change the calculation that a Governor Kemp makes. He doesn't have the cover that the White House has been giving him when he says he'd like to be able to preserve commerce in some parts of the state that aren't affected by the virus. What do you think, Patricia?
Well, I think that Governor Kemp has actually been ahead of the president on this. When the governor extended school closures through April 24th, I think that was an acknowledgement that this is going to last at least through the end of April. And that was, quite frankly, without the backup publicly of the White House. White House was still saying, well, maybe next Monday. So I think the governor does have this balance between what's coming out of the White House and what we know he's hearing from smaller towns when they say, we just don't have this problem here. This does not exist in our county. Although, to Adam's point, nobody knows what exists in any county without widespread testing. And so there is a real reluctance to deepen the economic impact of what we all know is about to happen. Most companies are dreading these second quarter results of sales, of income, and any small business you talk to, the conversation is, how much longer can I pay my people? When do I have to fire them? Is it tomorrow? Is it a week from now? Is it the end of March? And this is a balancing act that's also going to, of course, affect the state budget as well. And so I think, you know, Governor Kemp has a very difficult situation that he's in. Most public health experts see it more clearly. And he's getting that input as well.
Jim?
Yeah, you know, I don't think Governor Kemp ever bought into the Easter, return by Easter message. I mean, if you'll recall, he had a conference call with about 800 clergy last week, and he didn't say it himself, but Kathleen Toomey got on the line and told them that, look, at the center of every hotspot in Georgia is a religious service, and y'all need to take care of that, and so I think I'm like Patricia. I don't think he ever he was sending all sorts of signals that he never expected this to be done by April 12th, but I think you do have he is trying to grapple with and this situation with his chief of staff, I think, reflects that. He's trying to grapple with the fact that there is a political division in this coronavirus, that the true the horrendous hotspots are occurring in Democratic areas. I mean, like this within the city of Albany, that's a Democratic area. The city of Savannah is a Democratic city. Atlanta is a Democratic city. It's less pervasive in rural, mostly Republican counties. So there is a line to be walked there.
Well, of course, Adam, we should point out that Jim's absolutely correct about the spread of the virus in some ways being layered on a map of who voted for who for president in 2016. We should point out that largely that's because the rural areas that did vote for Trump are much more sparsely populated. They're communities where people don't necessarily have as much intimate contact with one another day to day, there's more room to breathe, so to speak. So I wouldn't want any of our listeners to think somehow that the virus is picking on Democrats rather than Republicans, Adam. And I know Jim obviously doesn't think that either, but it is interesting. And maybe I'm Patricia and Jim both make me aware that my expectation for a shutdown of the state by order by the governor may be not balancing the fact that he does want the state, Adam, to be able to recover and come back financially at some point. I get that that's a difficult issue to try to deal with, Adam.
Yeah, that's exactly right. You know, the executive editor and I had a conference call with the governor last Thursday, and that's one thing he talked about, because we segued into the economy. We, of course, talked about the ports and tourism, which are two of the big pillars here. And the ports are doing fine. I think we saw a centerpiece in the AJC this morning that kind of spoke to the activity there. But the service industry has just been gutted. And I think the governor is trying to balance the whole idea of shutting things down to try to contain the virus, but not shutting things down to the point that the economy completely stops. I know here in the city of Savannah, the estimate is the city loses something like $130,000 or $140,000 a day in city tax revenue. And if you think about that on the state level, I heard the speaker last week on the show talking about the state budget and mentioning the teacher pay raise and mentioning the income tax cut that were part of the initial budget that passed out of the House before they suspended the session. And it's just, when they come back, I don't even want to think about what the state revenue projections are going to be then and what kind of impact it's going to have. But again, that's something that we can't focus too highly on at this point, because we got to worry about saving lives. And certainly you look around the country and see the toll that it's taking. It's pretty sobering and pretty scary.
Jim?
Hey, Adam.
Yes, sir.
I got a question for you here. Back in February, the first really big signal of something that this was going to be a major influence in our lives was a report by the Port of Savannah, the Port Authority there, that traffic coming into the port was going to decrease by 30, maybe even 40%. That was right. In February. What are the numbers showing?
It came in about 20% was the final, and it's starting to pick up as the shipping has picked up back out of China. I live on the island, so every morning it's kind of become a little bit of a ritual of mine to take a drive over to basically a causeway where you look over the river channel, and there's ships steadily coming in. I think that from what the ports director, Griff Lynch, said last week was they had this 2 to 4 week window where things slowed down, but now it's picking up and it's gradually going to build. It's interesting that in February they did set a monthly, or at least for the month of February, an all-time record in terms of cargo. Obviously March they're not going to have that, but it'll be curious to see as we go forward, April and May, what the results are. And of course, import is part of it, but export is the other part. And I think that's what we don't know at this point, is what it's going to do in terms of exports going out of the port.
So that's the next crisis, Jim, coming up well after we, you know, let's say we get through June and the curve is flattened and we're all returning to our normal lives. The economic crisis still looms ahead of us as small businesses find they can't reopen. They don't have the resources to do it. We presumably are going to get some, there will be money from the $2 trillion package that Congress passed and the White House said the president signed late last week. We also know that there's now essentially disaster relief that the feds have approved to send to Georgia. But that's the story we're all going to be talking about, I suspect, in late June and July, Jim.
Yeah, it's going to be a very, very rough summer fiscally. We had House Speaker David Ralston on the show on Friday. He's basically saying, you know, when the legislature finally gets back into session, it's going to have to completely rewrite that budget and dump the pay raises for teachers that Governor Kemp had proposed, dump the income tax cut that the speaker himself had insisted on. it's going to be a different world.
Well, you know what? That's a great time for us to take a break, because when we come back, I do want to talk a little bit about some of the things that Speaker Ralston said on our show on Friday. We'll do that with Adam Van Brimmer, Patricia Murphy, and Jim Galloway after we pause for this break. Tom Faust told me during the break that Bo Duro, the mayor of Albany, told him after he got off our air that he'd love to come back sometime in a week or so. He wants to keep our listeners filled in on what's happening down in Savannah. So we'll see about that. And let's hope his city doesn't continue to grow as one of the worst hotspots in the world. Patricia, one of the things that David Ralston said on our show on Friday was that he wants the Georgia primaries to be moved to late June. Brad Raffensperger, we know, the Secretary of State, had moved them from March 24th to May 19th, the same day, the presidential preference primary, that is, the same day as all the other primaries. David Ralston said he doesn't think that's enough, good enough. He worries about the health of the volunteer poll workers, who are mostly older people. He worries about turnout because he believes people like to vote in the traditional way, going to the polling places. Well, over the weekend, Raffensperger essentially rejected that and said, nope, we're going to go ahead with May 19th. And the speaker responded to that and said, no, we should do it in June. Is this squabble likely to continue? Or, I mean, Raffensperger does have the right to set the date, right?
He has the right to set the date. I believe there may be a legislative maneuver possible to vote to move a primary, but without a legislature in session. I don't think that's possible. So I think that's why the speaker is using a public forum to try and influence this decision. And I think the problem with the May 19th deadline is that even the president now is moving his own deadlines back and back and back. So it's the end of March. No, we're going to have a lockdown a little bit further on. Is it Easter? No, it's going to be later. The schools at the state level we're pushing those deadlines back. So there's no guarantee that the state is going to be up and running by May 19th for a poll worker to show up. Will there be a lockdown in their own city or in county or locality? Other states that have gone ahead with their decisions to hold their primaries, like Illinois and Florida, have seen a big a downturn in their own turnout. And so I think the concern about turnout is very real. Raffensperger has said that he plans to mail an absentee ballot request form to every voter, but that requires two steps. So you have to request your absentee ballot, and then you have to vote, and you have to put a stamp on that two times. And that is a lot of work for people to do compared to just walking into the polling station. And so I think the concerns about turnout are very real, and the concern about poll workers even being able to show up are very serious as well. And other states like Kentucky and Indiana have decided to move already from May to June. And so other states are making these decisions right now.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting, Adam. The president, although the president said he wanted people to maintain social distancing through April now, he also, you know, in a kind of an offhand remark, talked about June being when perhaps we could really open things up again. So Patricia's point is well taken that May 19th, unless you're going to vote absentee, which the Secretary of State is obviously hoping people will do, it will really suppress turnout at the polls and make it maybe hard for people to vote if poll workers can't show up.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating conundrum. From my perspective, I did some research last week, and the average age of a poll worker in Georgia is like 70 years old. And there it is, as somebody, the folks that vote consistently, it's very traditional. It's very comfortable. It's something they look forward to, not just casting the vote, but the whole process of voting. But at the same time, it does make you think about, okay, do we need to alter how we do this? Mail-in ballots. I looked it up this morning. There's five states that do mail-in only ballots, and voter turnout has gone up in those states since they went and did that. And obviously, I'm sure they had some marketing campaigns, and and really rolled it out slowly and purposefully, and this is not one of those cases. But, you know, the other whole side of this is that this election in May or June or whenever it is going to be our first experience with this new voting system. And when they pushed the presidential primary and piggybacked it on top of this ballot that at least around here is full, and it reads like the phone book, this is going to be really complicated. And if poll workers are vulnerable, I don't think they're going to be – I think you see a lot of people that would have volunteered to poll work not volunteer to do it this time because of their age or just out of general caution. And it's I don't know what's going to happen whenever we go to the polls, but I think it's going to be pretty sloppy.
Jim Galloway, you're more than welcome to weigh in on that, but I also want to get to a story that you posted in the Jolt about Kelly Loeffler, so take your choice.
Okay, well, I'll do both. This is not either or. First of all, the one thing I would say is to Adam is and to Patricia too is I would throw in here that elections aren't kind of spur of the moment things. You cannot get to May 18th and decide whether you're going to have a May 19th vote. It's something that takes a whole lot of planning, a whole lot of staffing, a whole lot of technical expertise, because you're going to have to decide, you're going to have to create ballots that differentiate between people who have already cast a vote in the Democratic presidential primary and those who have not. So this is going to be very, very complicated. Now, on to Ms. Loeffler. CNN is reporting this morning that the U.S. Justice Department has begun an investigation into stock trading by members of the U.S. Senate. The focus appears to be on Richard Burr of North Carolina, and not on. But Ms. Loeffler says that she has not yet been contacted by anybody in law enforcement.
But this is not going away, Patricia Murphy, this story.
No. What typically happens after a story like this breaks that a senator or House member has been trading stocks or doing something that could resemble something like insider trading, it's typically an ethics investigation. That ethics investigation is drawn out for many years, and it's a way to say, oh, this is under investigation. It's being looked into, and I'm fine with it, is what the typical response is. Once the Justice Department gets involved, that is a whole different level of seriousness. And the fact that a Justice Department under President Trump is getting involved in this, I think, is an additional point of real concern for anybody who's involved in this or who has been. It's a big red flag. This is very unusual that the Justice Department would get involved this soon after a potential trade and supersede the ethics investigations. Those investigations, which the senator from North Carolina asked to happen, those will be put on hold, and the Justice Department will take full control of this, and it's a very serious matter.
I do want to be careful and reemphasize what Galloway just said, Adam. The CNN is reporting on Richard Burr specifically, that the Justice Department wants to look into him. And I do want to emphasize that the Loeffler Senate office insists that she has not, and none of them have been contacted about this thus far. Obviously, this is a developing story. We'll see as other news organizations pick this up and try to report more details about it, Adam. But I want to be careful here. We have no idea where Kelly Loeffler actually stands with the Justice Department right now.
Yeah, and I think it's important to also note that the Burr is a little bit different, right? I mean, he came out in response to this, and almost his comment from his spokesperson almost read like a confession in terms of the stock trades. And unlike Loeffler and Feinstein and some of the others who basically said, hey, you know, we have an arm's length arrangement, the advisors, they work my portfolio. I don't have any kind of contact with them. I don't worry about it. Burr, it didn't appear that is the case. So, but again, the Justice Department is going to start with the biggest fire, and that's Burr. And who knows, once they start digging into his, what they turn up and where they go from here. That's kind of the way the legal profession works, right? Is you start one place and you go where it leads you, and it may lead to Loeffler.
All right. That's final word for today's Political Rewind, Adam Van Brimmer. You get it. And appreciate your joining us from down there in Savannah. Patricia Murphy, always love having you with us on the show. And by the way, loved seeing you the other night on the town meeting that all of the TV stations in the state carried as you asked the governor and others questions. Good, we were thrilled that you were part of that, Patricia. And Jim Galloway, it's good to have you with us. We'll see you again for Friday's Political Rewind as we continue to spend more of our time talking coronavirus than the political shows that we typically do, and we'll keep that up as long as we need to. I'm Bill Nygut. See you again tomorrow.